Good morning. Welcome into the drive. Busy 2 hours for ye. Sean Salisbury will join us at 7:38. Sean time. Always love Sean Salisbury Wednesdays or Mondays or whenever we get
whatever him. Day, really.
Matt Barrow is going to join us at 8:05. Hey, got a neat announcement for you. I will have the honor and pleasure tomorrow of being able to MC a pretty damned cool event. I won't get into
I don't know.
I don't either. They're trying to pull off a professional image here. Something's wrong. We'll get into a lot more of this tomorrow, but Sacramento continues to kick ass. And the Republic tomorrow, along with owner Kevin Nagel, Mayor Steinberg, and others in the community are rolling out to the rail yards. It's basically the announcement, the update on the MLS soccer deal. And, guys, they're building a stadium.
Is tomorrow the groundbreaking?
They're building the stadium. You'll remember, like, with the original or with Golden One, there was, like, the, hey, we're starting the process, and then there's the shovels and all that. This is the we're starting the process. Oh. Like, they're going to start flattening the – I mean, it is effectively the groundbreaking.
Yeah.
But there will be another one, I think, down the road where you actually do the first shovels in and all that. This is where they grade the thing in bulldozers.
Well, you're used to shoveling
– quite a bit every day with you stuff. For 3 hours. So, yes, it is going to be a cool event. I mean, I've been telling you guys for a long time, the MLS is coming to Sacramento. And – I would say it is an overwhelming set of odds that they'll be playing here sometime in 2020.
Yeesh.
I haven't changed that. The announcement will come by the end of the year. And if you needed any further proof, the amount of time, effort, and money that they're throwing into this stadium is mind-boggling.
Already thrown it in.
Yeah.
Just the plans to be able to drop the plans for what the stadium would look like, all of the permitting process is already done, too, for them to get to this point.
Oh, they're done. They're ready to go.
That is time, and it is a lot of money.
So when you have cities like San Diego or Phoenix or whatever that right now are like, well, we're going to put out a request for whatever to
see
if
we
can get it. Yeah, it's kind of
so cute.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and start building a freaking stadium.
See you later. See you in 2020, buddy.
And I know Kevin Nagel a little bit. He's a rich dude. This just in, rich dudes don't get rich by being stupid with their money. So, you know, again, just follow the bouncing ball. Not going to be throwing tens of hundreds of whatever millions of dollars into a stadium if you don't know what's going on. So this is just a part of the process to follow. It is so cool to me that within basically a 5-year period, you're going to have a completely new downtown district with the Golden One Center. With this new, I'm going to call it Nagel Stadium. He's probably not going to like, we're going to talk to him tomorrow. He's probably not going to like that.
I'm pretty sure that's not what they're going to name
it. I think it should be Nagel Stadium. And you're going to have all that. You're going to have the downtown commons, and the Kimpton Hotel and everything in between all the new businesses. It's exactly what we were talking about.
Have you been down there this summer? And seen the progress on
yes,
the
I have. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Absolutely amazing. All right, so there's that. Good for them. That is awesome news. And we'll have all that coverage for you tomorrow. A big, big day for the city of Sacramento.
Huge.
So a report came out yesterday from Dr. Ann McKee and others. Examined the brains of 202 deceased football players. A survey of her findings was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Now, this study was conducted on former players, football players. 111 of them were NFL players.
Yes.
There was, I think, around 80 college players, and the others were high school players.
Yeah. Of the 111, 110 of those were found to have CTE, the degenerative disease believed to be caused by repeated blows to the head.
Can we just for one moment go back to our last segment? What did Jerry Jones say again?
Jerry Jones said a year ago.
Just a year ago.
When he was asked whether he believes there's a link between CTE and playing football, he said, no, that's absurd. There's no data that in any way creates a knowledge. There's no way you could have made a comment that there's an association or some type of assertion. In fact, he went on to say, in most things, you have to back it up by studies. Well, Jerry, here's a study of 111 players that played in the NFL. 110 were found to have CTE. Now, caveat here, and by the way, I am a huge believer in the medical community, and they know what they're talking about, and that the NFL is bad for your brain. However,
it's not even just the NFL. It's just football in general. It's rolling the dice.
You do have to acknowledge that this is in no way, shape, or form a general random study. These brains, or at least the high majority of these brains, were donated by the families to this study, thought being because the family suspected some form of CTE. So we don't know that out of every 1,000 football players, 995 are going to have CTE.
Well, and most of the participants in this study played football during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, with the small percentage being the 2000s and, 2010s. So this is, you have to also keep in mind that these brains that were donated and studied in this overarching study for CTE, that the equipment has changed since the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Sure.
They're trying. And in the NFL, it's funny, like Jerry Jones's comments, really, to me, because I think it's just ill-advised, especially when you look at the fact that the NFL in 2016 pledged $100 million in support for an independent medical research and engineering advancements in the neurosciences, right? Because they know this is a problem. This is in addition to the already $100 million that the NFL has already spent on medical research for brains and neuroscience. So the NFL is willing to say, hey, there likely is a link, and we're going to put forth the money to help with this.
Do me a favor, because we got to go to break. Go on your computer real quick. Yeah. I want you to search. We're just going to do this on the air. Go to ESPN.com.
Okay.
Just go to ESPN.com's front page.
Okay.
And you know how on the right side of ESPN.com they'll have the top stories?
Yeah, and by the way, you're really having a lot of faith in our internet connection
right now.
Yeah, that's
true. All right, so on the
right side.
Well, that's loading because it's not.
Okay,
that's
go
fine.
Ahead. On the right
you
side.
You got it. On the right side, find for me this NFL story.
It's not there.
Now click on the NFL tab.
Okay.
Click on the NFL tab. Well, that's, because that's every top story is on the right. So you go to the NFL page. Well, that's where it's just going to be your top NFL story. So what place on the right side is this story?
It's not there.
Oh, it's not there.
And the top story is how Bill Belichick has mastered the art of saying nothing.
We'll get into this a lot more tomorrow. What I find is interesting, I had to actually put NFL CTE study and ESPN in Google to find the story they put up. And
I got it on CNN and the Washington Post.
Here's what the headline is. Now, the headline for the New York Times is 110 NFL brains, and then it goes on to talk about it. The headline of the ESPN story, CTE found in nearly 90% of brains donated by football players. They kind of goof the numbers to take it out. And then when you read the story, in the third paragraph, the first sentence on ESPN, the report doesn't confirm that the condition is common in all football players. It reflects high occurrences in samples at a Boston brain bank. It is absolutely sickening to read the difference in coverage in, every major site there is, and then ESPN and how they are not covering as much as they can this story.
Uh-huh.
We'll get into this a lot more tomorrow about how the NFL is basically big tobacco, and we're just kind of rooting for it, and that's fine. We'll take a break. 3 for Madness is next in the Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Oh, God.
There we go. Yes. You brought up Brock Lesnar. You did this to yourself. Brock Lesnar said he'd fight Jon Jones anytime, anywhere. Would that be the biggest fight in UFC history?
Sorry, I don't understand the question because of the dumb music, but I'll answer it anyways because I see it written in front of me. Is this his entrance music, really?
Yeah.
Wrestling, I don't know anything about it, but really, isn't the best entrance The Rock's? Like, that's the best, right?
Probably the most hard-hitting, that or Stone Cold.
Like, when nobody's expecting him, and then you hear, do you smell what the Rock?
Yeah, he and Stone Cold
really
have the best ones, because Stone Cold's was glass-shattering, so just randomly glass would shatter. So, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Would that be the biggest fight in UFC history? Yes, it would. Yes, it would. You would have one of the biggest draws in UFC history, arguably the biggest, in Brock Lesnar, because it is a crossover-type personality. And then you have the greatest fighter in UFC history in Johnny Bones Jones. Now, John Jones has had issues, many, many issues, but make no mistake about it. John Jones is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world who has never lost. Yes, he has a loss due to a disqualification from beating a guy too much. By the way, he was beating a deaf contestant on The Ultimate Fighter. That's actually a very true story. Hit him after the bell, got a disqualification.
Oh.
He is the best fighter in UFC history. This would be the biggest fight in UFC history.
So I'm curious how this works, because you're the UFC guy. In terms of money.
Yes.
Would it be that high, like the biggest purse ever?
Yeah, they would probably. Yes, because you would have Conor McGregor type UFC money for both guys.
So when I looked up highest paid UFC fights.
Yeah. Don't look at that. That's what's disclosed by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. That doesn't include bonuses. That doesn't include back end. That doesn't include pay-per-view points. There's a ton of money that is not disclosed.
Okay.
That's just their basic purse. Listen, this would be the biggest fight, and I'm going to tell you something. This fight will probably happen. This isn't an accident that they're doing this.
Oh, yeah.
When Conor and Floyd get done, there is going to be a massive void in the UFC, and I'm not entirely sure Conor McGregor is ever going to fight in the UFC again after pocketing $100 million to fight Floyd Mayweather for about 8 minutes. So I fully believe this is going to happen. I imagine it's not going to be the catch weight because Brock can't come down. It's just going to be a super fight. Non-title, whatever the hell you want to do. And, yeah, people are going to lose their minds over it. And, hell, I'll watch the fight. That's fine. Number two. Matt, would you watch the fight? You're
absolutely.
A WWE guy. You'd watch it, wouldn't you?
Oh, I mean, I'd watch John Jones fight anyway. But
I don't have anything against Brock Lesnar. I think he's the most overrated fighter in UFC history. But I like him, and I respect that he can come in and beat a guy like Randy Couture or Heath Herring or two other guys he beat. But no, I mean, literally, I think he's 5-3, if I remember correctly, something like that. But either Shane Carwin was the other guy.
His name alone sells fights.
Yes, it does.
The Phoenix Suns say they won't include Josh Jackson in any Kyrie Irving talks, but should they?
No, they shouldn't, because the reality is that they're heavy at that position. Regardless of the fact that Brandon Knight just tore his ACL, they still have Tyler Ulis. They have Eric Bledsoe on the roster. So I think they have other pieces that they can include that would take care of the backlog at that position. Josh Jackson, like with any rookie, you don't know what they're going to end up being. But the ceiling is pretty high for him, and it's at a position that they're short at. So I don't think they should.
So in spirit, I agree with you. I agree with you in spirit when it comes to the Suns because of their position. That, yeah, you don't need to include Josh Jackson because you do have Eric Bledsoe and Tyler Ulis. So there's not a major opportunity. But the philosophy of I'm not including Josh. Let's just pretend they don't have Eric Bledsoe. I'm not going to include Josh Jackson. Why wouldn't you include Josh Jackson? It doesn't make sense to me.
How do you pretend they don't have other assets?
I'm saying that there. I'm saying there are other teams and teams in general that they so covet their draft picks, and it's like, well, Josh Jackson, we don't know what he is. He has a huge ceiling. He could be anything. He could be Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is one of the best players in the NBA. Is there a chance Josh Jackson could be better than Kyrie Irving? Yes, there is a chance. Of course there's a chance. But the overwhelming odds is that Josh Jackson is not going to be as good in the NBA as Kyrie Irving. And yes, they play different positions. I mean, overwhelming odds. So you have a 25-year-old sure thing in one hand, and you have I mean, he looked good in summer league, and he was a top pick. You know, he's a top four pick. In the other hand, of course you include, if they needed a point guard is what I'm saying, of course you include Josh Jackson. Of course you don't say no. That whole philosophy baffles me.
But they don't need a point guard.
I know. That's why I'm talking about the philosophy of not including these picks. Now, if it's LeBron James, I get it. Come on, get out of here. He could be something bigger. No, he probably won't. And it's not like Kyrie's 29 years old. Kyrie's 25 freaking years old. Get off of it.
Well, then how is it different than saying the Kings shouldn't include De'Aaron Fox for Kyrie Irving?
Again, same thing, because they have George Hill, because they have De'Aaron Fox. But at the same time, if they had the opportunity to trade De'Aaron Fox straight across for Kyrie Irving and hadn't made the Hill move or had I would say, of course you make that trade. And I know that's unpopular with Kings fans. If De'Aaron Fox is as good as Kyrie Irving someday, that's going to be amazing. And guess what? The overwhelming odds, I say again, is that De'Aaron Fox will not be as good as Kyrie Irving. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to shoot an arrow in anybody's purple heart. It's just a fact, man. You go with the sure things. He's 25. Now the headline's going to be Dave wants the Kings to trade De'Aaron Fox for Kyrie Irving. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying people need to chill out on the what's behind door number three and look at what's actually out there and has been proven and has, you know, won championships and been awesome. Number three.
Anthony Davis says he's very optimistic about the Pelicans this season. Should he be?
Well, it depends on how you define very optimistic. Is very optimistic making the playoffs?
They're in the West. Not a shot.
They're in the West.
Good luck.
But I will say that when you add a giant piece, literally, like DeMarcus Cousins, on any team, it's going to take them a minute to gel. And I'll tell you right now, man, and I don't think I'm telling tales out of school. DeMarcus Cousins' head was not in the game last year at all after that trade, at all. You got an offseason. They're working out together. They go back to Kentucky. They understand each other. They're friends. Their chemistry is undeniable. You bring in Rondo, who, if he just assists, and then Jrue Holiday, it's actually not – when you go Rondo, Holiday, Cousins, and Davis as your top four, that's not a bad starting four. Are they going to make the playoffs?
Dave, listen
Maybe.
To me. Where is the NBA now in terms of style? Do you rely on centers?
Yes, 100%.
Like, as 100%. Heavily as your guard play. Well,
more
that's
heavily.
Good. Then maybe this is going to happen because right now, on their roster, New Orleans has Alexis Ajinka, Omer Asik, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, and Monta Ūdis, mm-hmm. all forward centers.
Sure.
Let's just have half of our roster be centers and forwards.
Well, what's the other half? Guards? There you go.
Dave, I'm just saying.
You're saying they're too
I disagree
heavy?
With Anthony Davis because of how the roster is built right now, especially when you pair that with the fact that Alvin Gentry, as of now, is still the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, his system isn't even built for that. I expect
they have zero shooting, too.
I expect Anthony Davis to say this. I expect him to, but he's 100% wrong.
Well, I mean, there are exceptions.
Really?
How did the Utah Jazz do last year in the West?
But Utah had shooting.
There's literally
you've also got
like
two
five
of the top
guys
four,
on this roster. I don't know who they are.
You got two of the top four big men in the league.
But you could put all five defenders in the paint and feel pretty confident that
Let
you're not going to give up a lot of outside shooting. I mean, what's the best they have? Jrue Holiday, Solomon Hill? That's it.
You got listen, their perimeter defense is going to be suspect. There's no doubt about it. Their perimeter defense is going to be suspect.
Their perimeter offense is
already
suspect.
And their shooting is going to be suspect. But at the same time, you know, the NBA is cyclical, and people forget about that sometimes. Like, once upon a time, it was a center-driven league, and now it's a point guard-driven league and a three-point shooting league. Do we honestly think that that's going to continue forever? And I'm not trying to say the Pelicans are the new Warriors.
It is for the length of these guys' career.
When you have strength at one spot, somebody's going to come in and find a weakness at the other. So for every time you've got these jump-shooting teams that roll around, you know, jump-shooting, you're going to have these big beasts down low that can't be guarded. There's going to be some sort of trade-off. Now, don't paint me in a corner here. I'm not saying the Pelicans are going to be a great team next year. I'm not even saying they're going to make the playoffs. But I do think they will be better than what they were last year. So if
that wouldn't take much.
They were 34-48. So Ugh. I'll tell you this much. I think the Pelicans will be right around a 500 or better team. I do.
No.
That's seven more wins.
You're so dumb.
That's you know what? Mark this down.
In the West?
Unless somebody gets injured, I'll bet you the Pelicans are 500 or better next year.
All right.
Mark
Isolate
it down.
That sound.
Damn it, mark it down.
This is
None of us will be employed in April anyways. No, it is not.
Oh.
Let me tell you something. I don't even know if DeMarcus Cousins is going to be on the team at the end of the year next year.
Probably won't.
I'm telling you. He probably won't. It's nothing to do with DeMarcus
Cousins.
Cousins
is going to be their best three-point shooter. That's the sad part.
He very well may.
That is the sad part.
All right, we got to take a break. Sean Salisbury is joining us right up next. We'll talk to him about the CTE stuff and opening of camp and all that fun stuff. On The Drive, People are having fun with your Omer Asik pronunciation. Sports
1140
KHDK. Sean Salisbury in just a couple of minutes. Matt Barrows is going to join us at 8 o'clock. Talked Raiders yesterday. We'll talk Niners. I can tell you right now, our Raider to Niner coverage this year will probably be 70-30. I think just that's fair. In direct proportions of expected wins, probably.
Well, and the other obvious factor.
We are the home of the Raiders. We are. We absolutely are. But, you know,
but
listen,
it makes it so much better.
There's a lot of Niners
fans.
When
the Raiders are pretty friggin' legit right now.
100%. Guns N' Roses tickets coming up in just a little over
Get
an hour.
Trivia answers ready.
As well. Well, yes, we will
Study
give you
up.
Yet another way to earn Guns N' Roses tickets. Now, listen, yesterday, they answered right off the bat. Carlos called it, if I remember correctly. It was Carlos.
Carlos. He was our winner yesterday.
He did great. Had the answer. Several others had the answer. And that wasn't for, like, a massive hit. It was a hit. Wasn't a massive hit. Joining us right now, Jack of all trades, America's top sports guest, and now really America's top sports host, whether it's TV, whether it's radio, doesn't matter. Follow him online, Sean Unfiltered. It's my good friend, Sean Salisbury, our good friend, Sean Salisbury. Sean, it's Dave and Katie. Thanks for joining us, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good, man. A lot of stuff on the plate, and I know you have your show, of course, later as well on the BN Network. I'm sure you'll be hitting this hard. Let me get the hard hitting question out of the way right off the bat, Sean. You know it's Shark Week. I'm pretty sure if I'm right, I'm not sure if you're a Shark Week guy or not. Michael Phelps raced a shark, and everyone was all over this, and it had a ton of viewers. You know, it turns out Michael Phelps. I didn't think, Sean, that Michael was going to be racing side by side with a free shark. You don't want to do that. You don't want to see, you know, multiple gold medalists eaten on national TV. What I didn't know, Sean, was that Michael Phelps was racing against a digital shark, that it wasn't a real shark at all. And I don't know about you, but this is America. And I think when you have Michael Phelps is basically a walking bald eagle. And when you perpetuate a fraud like that on the public, I happen to get upset about it.
Yeah, I'm a big Shark Week guy. I'd like them to change the documentaries, I think, more often every year. But
yeah, they're pretty standard now, huh?
Yeah, I've seen some. You know, we've seen them. But I'm a Shark Week guy in kind of a fun way. And you know, I'm intrigued with marine biology. I had a guy from Long Beach. One of his shows was on last night about Los Angeles, about, you know, the influx of sharks in the Pacific Ocean and stuff. And I honestly asked him, I said, is it like, are sharks like some animals, if you don't bother them, they don't bother you? And he kind of agreed with that. He said, now, obviously, you kind of got to be smart and wise, but why not put Michael Phelps in the water with a real shark? Maybe not a great white, but one that's maybe not as, I mean, if somebody bites a leg off, oh well, it was good TV. I mean, that's the risk you take, right?
Jeez.
I mean, he's got enough gold medals. Heck, sacrifice a leg for the people, man. Come
but
on,
not
Michael.
A digital so, shark. That's yeah, fakery.
He actually wanted to race a real one.
Doesn't matter.
It's to me. I mean, I didn't know when they first announced it. I said, well, how's this going to work? Is he going to swim in his pool and the shark's right in the ocean next to him? I said, how's the shark going to go straight and know what I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it. I thought it was to me it was a fraud anyway, just another way to get people to tune in. Now, Michael Phelps is awesome, obviously, and you don't want to put anybody in danger. But if you don't want to put him in danger, then race something that's not like when someone, one of those sprinters raced a horse. And nobody's in danger there. Let's go. So.
Well, you can actually make a horse go straight. You can't make a shark do
what
you want it to do.
Put
blood in the water or a body in there that's bleeding. Exactly. So to me, it's kind of, I mean, I understand the introduction to Shark Week, but if you're going to introduce me to Shark Week, make it real. So
thank you.
I'm glad nobody got hurt, but yeah, don't give me the fake stuff. I don't need that.
What is it you say? Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Don't piss in my face and tell me it's raining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn right. Sean Salisbury with us. All right. So
I have to.
Please go ahead.
We're going to actually transition to something that matters right now. Did you by chance see the press conference with Jason Garrett yesterday of the Dallas Cowboys, Sean?
I saw bits and pieces of it. I like Jason, but the constant nonsense coming out of there and the way that they protect, I mean, it makes me throw up in my mouth. So I can only stomach so much of it being here in Texas, trust me.
Well, and the crazy thing to me is they obviously made a mistake. And Lucky Whitehead is the one that is suffering from that. Now, according to his agent, there's plenty of teams that are going to be interested in him. But when you make a mistake like this and you come out and you say, we made the best decision for our team and we're going to stick with it moving forward, that's in essence what he said 8 different times when asked about this. At what point do you expect a franchise like the Dallas Cowboys or any other professional franchise, when they make a mistake like this, to come out and say, hey, we made a mistake, we're sorry? It's not like they have to re-sign him, but at least own it, right?
Yeah, and the timing's curious, too, when they say, well, we were going to get rid of him anyway. It had nothing to do with this. You know, it's such a crock list. And I don't understand in society and sports why we're afraid. Like, what's going on with the Kyrie LeBron thing? Who said he said what? Well, what's the problem if Kyrie says, I want to be traded, I don't want to be around LeBron? You might piss LeBron off. Oh, well, and? Okay, whether we think Kyrie's right or wrong on where he wants to leave. So what? The same thing here. Why can't a team like the Cowboys step up and say, you know what? We jump to conclusions. Now, I don't know if the guy's going to have to compete during training camp. And if he wins the job, great. If he doesn't, then like anybody else, that's how we compete. Why can't you step up and say, we screwed up. We're going to be transparent about this. We jumped the gun on fall. I mean, when it wasn't him, we made a mistake. Then everybody would say, you know what? Who hasn't? Who hasn't jumped the gun when some news has come out and we've criticized somebody and said, whoa, let's take a step back. That wasn't true. Or whatever the case. I don't understand it. I don't understand why you got to look at us and tell us. And you know when he says it that many times that he won't answer the question. It's right. He's covering the franchise. They made a mistake. Everybody knows it. Now, if you wanted to cut him, fine. But wouldn't you have waited till camp started so you had the extra body in camp? He's a guy who was on the team. They're not fooling anybody. We know it. Teams all do it. And I'm telling you, the Cowboys just seem to do it more than anybody else. I don't understand in life what's wrong with admitting you screwed up. We all do. The Cowboys aren't above it. They're sure as heck not the only ones that have done it. And I just don't understand why you can't sit there, you know what, stand up, raise your hand, and say, you know what, we screwed up, man. We screwed up. We jumped the gun on this kid, and like all of us did. I think many of us said, oh, how could this kid get his dog stolen? Now he's going, why would a pro athlete have to steal from a story? Well, you know, it's hard for us to fathom. Well, you know, people make mistakes, and the Cowboys have done it a few times. So I don't think there's anything wrong with admitting it. Now, to me, you look like more of an ass clown when you sit there and try to deny it. I don't get it in any walk of life society why it's not okay to screw up once in a while and admit it. Because now you've got to chase the lie all around. Now, all year long, all the time, you're going to have to always say, well, he wasn't part of it. We didn't screw. I mean, you try to pretend we're doing what's best for the organization. Of course you're doing what's best for the organization. You're not going to talk about it because everybody in the world, God himself and everybody watching, knows you guys screwed up, but it's not okay. Take it. And what's wrong with saying we apologize for bringing the kid back? I mean, I don't get why you can't do the right thing. I just never understand that. I don't get it.
Sean Salisbury with us. Sean, speaking of the right thing, a study put out yesterday, I'm sure you've looked at and read quite a bit about, Journal of the American Medical Association, talking about CTE, and it's pretty damning. 110 of 111 samples that played in the NFL had some form of CTE. And Sean, we go back a long way. We've had long, long talks about the after effects of playing in the NFL. You've told some stories that make my hair stand up on the back of my neck of some of the things you've gone through with your body. And looking at the breakdown here, of the 111, 7 were quarterbacks. But I'm guessing a guy like you, that doesn't matter. When we hear the story, Sean, we're at 50,000 feet. Katie and I, shockingly, never played in the NFL. So we see a story like that, and we feel empathy. You see a story like that. Obviously, you're a broadcaster. You have to talk about it. But I'm guessing there's a little bit extra there for you as well because you did have an NFL career.
Yeah, and you know what, guys? And the first thing people say, well, they knew what they were going, getting in, you know, they were getting into when they played. Yeah, they knew it was physical and a brutal game. But so does a construction worker who knows that he's got to walk on scaffolding 2 stories above, and he may fall off. And when he falls off and hurts his head, it's not like we say, well, why'd you get into being a construction worker? We say it's an unfortunate set of circumstances. And I don't know if all of those players got CTE from NFL, college, high school, or in the 7th grade. I don't know. And I know, but it's an alarming statistic. And I know you can skew statistics good towards that way or against it, depending on what side of the fence you sit on. I sit on the fence of let's just try to find an answer of how we can fix it. That's what I do. I don't sit on the fence of, you know, people going out there and some guy who's never had a concussion being a part of this and going and running for money. I don't say, man, he won't be able to because he'll be tested. But it's an alarming. I always say err on the side of caution when it comes to people's health. It's scary because I've seen players. I mean, Junior Seau is one of my best friends. And, I mean, you know, I you see what it's done to him. Now, is that the only reason people at times are suicidal? No. Guys lose paychecks. Guys aren't in the limelight. Guys, there's nothing that we will ever do as a former football player, and I know this is a fact because I've lived it and I talk to guys all the time about it. There's nothing in our careers that we will ever do that will give us that excitement, that thrill, that competitive, that sitting in the locker room, that the camaraderie and the competition. You can't do that again. I've been in broadcasting for you. You can be a coach. That's great. And you may find something you'd love to do more, but you'll never be able to – you'll never have that feeling again. It doesn't ever get better competitive-wise or that feeling when you're done playing, and most of us are done playing in our early 30s. Most are done playing in their 20s. If you're fortunate to have a double-digit career like I was, then great. But when it comes to concussion, scary stat. We got to, the key now as we move forward, not pointing the finger at why somebody did this or where was the ignorance, because we were all ignorant to it 30 years ago. We're becoming more informed and more educated. The next thing is, how do we prevent it? And how do we prevent it? And how do we get the guys that are suffering through it, that don't know how to pick their daughter up from school day after day because they have to keep asking directions? How do we help them? How do we help their families? How do we stop this from the future and make sure that some seventh grader now, 15 years from now, knows how to say his name? So, yeah, it's an alarming. It's scary. And if that's the case, and if we do a bigger statistical study, what will that tell you? Will 3,000, will 2,975 of them have it? And I don't know when they got it because I'm not a doctor. Guys far smarter than me know better than I do. But I know it exists, and I know concussions are wrong. And it's not just quarterbacks or anybody else. It could be one concussion. It can be 15 concussions. Mm-hmm. It affects everybody different, but it is an alarming statistic, and one if we're not taking notice of as an NFL, as a players association, as a public, then we're making a huge mistake and doing a disservice to everybody, to the families of the players, to the fans who watch the game, and to the NFL, and to the people who are a part of it.
Now, Sean, according to the doctor that conducted this study, the majority of the brains that they studied in this of former NFL players, now there was college and high school included in there as well, 111 of them were NFL players. The majority of those NFL players played between 1950 and through the 1990s. Do you think that it would be different, that the NFL has made steps in the right direction, including how they protect players as well as the equipment upgrades, that it would be not as severe, the percentage of players that have CTE?
Okay, I sure hope so. You would think so. Like in anything else, our cars from 1950, mm-hmm. we get better gas mileage now. Like our, any of the houses that are built, well, maybe not. Maybe we'll cut corners on that. But
like airbags, things like that, I see what you're saying.
Technology, for instance. Technology. Back in 50, I mean, you talk to kids now, they don't even know what a phone booth is. So things have improved, obviously. That doesn't necessarily mean that we like it more, but it's improved. I would hope that, and that does not shock me, that from the 50s and the time I played to the 90s, you know, through the 90s, that's where the majority of that study, that those people played in that time. I would hope that guys are playing in 2010. Are more protected. We've changed the rules. Heck, we're close to playing touch football at times on our quarterbacks. I'm not being facetious. I mean, we protect them very well. The shots to the head still happen, but equipment's better. The way we go about our business is better. We penalize guys and fine them more, so they're more apt to stay away from it. Yet then the other side is, well, were the guys that played in the leather helmets who weren't using their heads, how many of those guys were concussed? So I think it goes both ways. But yeah, if we're not, if the statistic is the same now that 100 out of 101 or 99 out of 100 players are concussed and have CTE that played in the NFL, if we did that a broader study and it was, you know, 1,450 out of the 1,500 a year that played for 2 years or more, then obviously we're doing wrong. Then we're doing wrong. So I would hope with technology, with protection, with equipment, with education, that we're doing more in the NFL, obviously, with lawsuits, sure as hell doesn't want it to be 8 million guys coming at him. So it's just, it would seem fit that we're doing a better job of it because we're smarter now. In 1960, nobody cared and nobody knew. When I played, heck, in the 80s and 90s, when I had a concussion and did it and went back in a game, we used smell and saw. I'm not blaming anybody.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to come out of the game. It's nobody's fault.
Right.
We used the ammonia and the smelling salts on the sideline to wake ourselves up in between series to go back in.
Yep.
That's how you dealt with a concussion. And that's the honest to God truth. So it's players' fault too. You know, it's that macho image. Hey, I'm not coming out again, especially if you were a backup that got a chance to start. You get hit in the head. You say, hell, I'm not letting anybody know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be pulled out. This is my chance. And so there's a lot of people to blame, and we're all part of it. But that's not the point. The point is, how do we fix and how do we take care of those that are suffering through it and prevent those that may suffer through it down the road?
Going back to something you said at the beginning of this conversation, Sean, when you said, you know, yeah, we knew it was a rough game going in. It's interesting. We were taking a little bit of a look at this earlier, kind of the long con that has been going on. I'm talking about, we compared the headlines on ESPN versus the New York Times, and how the study isn't even on, it's not just on the front page of ESPN. It's not on the NFL front page on ESPN. And then the wording is different in the article. You see Jerry Jones just a year ago saying it's absurd to think there's a connection between CTE and the NFL. So when you see something like this going on, Sean, are you like me finding some similarities between what the NFL is doing with concussions? It smells a lot like what tobacco was doing.
Yeah, no, hey, like I said, the NFL for 10 years gave me, and quite frankly, my career gave me an opportunity to jump into this. My education was in broadcasting at SC. It's my degree's in. But the playing football gave me an opportunity to go a route that somebody didn't have to go to South Dakota to get a job at a local TV station. So the NFL has given me, quite frankly, about everything that I've ever wanted in my career, and has led to some great things. I have nothing bad to say other than it's complete BS for Jerry Jones, who I like, to say that the NFL, it's absurd. It's absurd to think that the NFL and concussions and CTE isn't part of it. That's for such a smart guy. That's such an ignorant, asinine comment by Jerry Jones. But yeah, it starts to feel like it. And no offense to my former employer, they gave me 12 great years. But if that's not your lead story at times is Kim Kardashian or Khloe Kardashian and the what's the Cleveland Cavaliers guy name who disappeared in the playoffs?
Tristan Thompson.
You'll lead with that on some 6 o'clock dumbass Sports Center show. But man alive, you're going to tell me the guy's dying of CTE and statistics prove it. You're not even going to mention or put it on your NFL page. Well, let me just out of the irony, who runs Monday Night Football? And who has Sunday shows?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So please don't tell me it's not a – I mean, I'm not saying they do it completely, but there's a concentrated effort to protect your side. There just is. And you're protecting it, and the NFL's protecting it. Jerry Jones is a big part of the NFL. He's an owner. But the thing that hurts, I think, the most for some is that here's a guy who owns a team, and those very players who bust their butt for you and the sacrifice, quite frankly, Tony Dorsett, even though he wasn't playing for Jerry Jones, was a Cowboy, though, they've sacrificed, quite frankly, some of their lives to help you win championships or to help you be a part or help you to own a historic franchise. And you're going to tell me that it hasn't been proven that some sort of CTE has come from, like the junior sales, from concussions and from playing in the NFL? It's absurd for him to even say it. And when you say something like that, it automatically tells me that there is, like you said, tobacco. It's like, let's make sure we protect something. So, yeah, and that's why you start to say, well, what do I lend credence to when somebody brings out a story? Well, we'll talk about some celebrity owning a team or a celebrity dating a celebrity or a basketball player, but, man, let's stay away from something that's real-life stuff. Yeah, it reeks, but what are you going to do about it other than stay the course and try to continue to inform people and protect those who go through it? And quite frankly, protect the league, too. The league deserves to be protected as well. They've given us a lot. But instead of working against each other, I don't understand why we're not working for each other. It makes no sense to me.
1 to 5 p.m. our time, SB Nation Radio, Be In Sports USA. You can watch them on TV. Sean Salisbury doing all kinds of great stuff out there and still finding time each week to spend with us. We always appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
My pleasure. Talk to you guys next week. Thank you.
Have a good one, Sean.
You got it. Sean Salisbury. And follow him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. We'll take a break. When we get back, Sacramento Bees' Matt Barrows will open up 49er training camp, which technically opens up tomorrow. First practice on Friday. We'll check in with Matt, who is the most connected media member, I think, for everything 49er. We'll look at the offseason and what they're doing, the competitions in camp coming up, including Reuben Foster, guy they would have picked third. Looks like his shoulder's a lot better than people thought. We'll take a break. Come back and talk about that next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.